This is the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom show, the wake-up call, brought to you on WCOMFM.org. I'm co-host Dick Paddock, and we have as guests today Wes and Jane Hare, old friends, old comrades in the struggle for peace and justice. And Lori Hoyt, my co-host, is right next to me here, and I'll let her take over from here.
Thanks, Dick. We're very happy to be here. We're actually doing this outside of the studio, so this is kind of interesting and a little different. We're at Wes and Jane's house, and we're going to be talking about the SOA. And Wes and Jane have been faithfully going for how many years? Oh, many, many?
Our first trip down there was in 1997.
1997, so this is about 17.
This will be my 17th annual trip.
17th annual trip. So I think a lot of you who are listening will know what we're talking about when we say SOA, the School of the Americas. But just in case there's a few people, because there's always new people. I just was somewhere where they talked about how Chapel Hill has a 50% turnover every year. So there's a lot of people who have moved in who may not know what SOA is. So we'll start out by finding out, what are we talking about today?
Well, the School of the Americas, as it was called, got started in 1946. And let me read you something that is in an article that I got about from Theodore Roosevelt, 1904. In the Western Hemisphere, the adherence of the United States to the Monroe Doctrine may force the United States to the exercise of an international police power.
Wow.
Now that's Teddy Roosevelt. And shortly after that, the U.S. Army started what they called for many years the School of the Americas. And if you think of assassinations or brutalities of communities that have occurred south of the Rio Grande by countries that are, quote, on the inside of the United States government, then these assassinations and brutalities were caused by people who were trained at the U.S. Army School of the Americas over these many years. The School of the Americas, the U.S. Army, the School of the Americas that Jane and I have been going to started 25 years ago, this November. November 21st to 23rd is the 25th anniversary. And this got started by a Maryknoll priest named Father Roy Bourgeois. After the assassination in November, what happened to be the weekend before Thanksgiving, of Jesuit priests in El Salvador and their housekeeper and the housekeeper's daughter, by people who they later were able to document were trained at this U.S. Army School of the Americas. First it was in Panama, but now, for many years, the SOA has been located at Fort Benning, Georgia.
So the School of the Americas protest that you go to is different. The protest is against the School of the Americas.
Definitely.
And so the protest that you go to started 25 years ago, although the School of the Americas, some form of it was started in 1946.
The U.S. Army School of the Americas was started that many years ago.
Yes, even though in 1904...
Teddy Roosevelt
was saying we're probably going to have to go that far, but that it was very prescient on his part. So it actually got started officially in 1946, and has been going on ever since. And they have been training, bringing people, soldiers and military and others from Latin American and South American countries, in training them in crowd control, in assassination and torture, and
Now, of course, the U.S. Army has never admitted that last stuff.
No.
About assassinations and crowd control, yes.
Yeah. You know,
but what they did over many years, once the SOA Watch, which is the organization, began after the assassination of these Jesuit priests, they were, once they got going by Father Roy, the first thing that Father Roy did is kind of an interesting thing. He and a couple other Congressional Medal of Honor people and so on got a microphone, and they climbed up in a tree. They at night, they went on Fort Benning and climbed up in a tree outside the barracks of where these soldiers and various other people from these countries south of the Rio Grande were barracking. Mm-hmm. And they had an announcement by Father Archbishop Romero, mm-hmm. That they had copied about, who had also been assassinated by several people who were documented then from the Freedom of Americans Act to have been trained at the School of the Americas, and they broadcast Father Archbishop Romero's speech.
Wow.
And it was, "In the name of God, stop the fighting, defend your children." That's not an exact quote, but that's what they broadcast.
The gist of the speech.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And of course the Army came right out there and got Father Roy and his buddies out of the tree. Mm-hmm. And that was the start of the SOA watch.
And we interviewed Father Roy Bourgeois here at this very table not too many years ago. And he got interested in this whole thing because he was at that time a Marian old priest in, what was it, Guatemala? Where was he? Or El Salvador? He was in one of those countries.
I don't remember which. But I don't think he was in Salvador. But the assassination of these Jesuits,
yes,
was a tremendous trigger point.
But he was where he became very aware of our policies and the effect of our policies on a lot of brutality against the people in the country he was trying to help, and that fired him up. So that when he came back, he started looking into this and investigating, and has become the mainspring and the inspiration and the, you know, the one carrying the torch to get people coming out to the SOA watch. Yeah.
The first time that I remember meeting Father Roy, we lived in San Antonio from 89 through 95, and the assassinations happened in 89, in the fall of 89, and the San Fernando Cathedral is an old cathedral in the center of San Antonio, and Father Roy came there in probably 1990 or 91 and talked to us about how the School of Americas was training people who had, were responsible for so many of these atrocities. And that's the first that I had heard. But in San Antonio that fall, when the assassinations occurred, it was a shocking thing because there were such close connections between
the Jesuits
yeah. in San Antonio and many of them were well known in San Antonio. So it was just a, and then it was not until we moved to Richmond, Virginia, that we started in 97 to go to these gatherings to protest the School of the Americas.
Yeah. So you've been going for a long time, and Father Roy's been, so he's the one got this protest, this SOA watch, watching what mm-hmm. they're doing, letting people know. So right. he's been going all around the country and speaking all over, trying to sort of like Paul Revere, the English are coming, you know, this is what's happening
sound
in our name,
the alarm.
In our tax dollars, because it's yes. shocking, it's still shocking, mm-hmm. even though you've heard of it, it's heartbreaking. So
if you think of some of the names that people will have heard, the biggest name of someone who was trained and then became a dictator in Panama was Manuel Noriega. Manuel Noriega was one of the early trainees during this period of time that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
And because he's living, I don't know where he is now, probably somewhere in Florida is what I've heard. But
in prison still.
I'm not sure. I guess he's still in prison. But the bigger name, another big name that people will have heard about, was a protege of our former senator, Jesse Helms.
Mm-hmm.
Roberto d'Aubuisson was who was also trained at the School of the Americas, was a key player in the assassination of Archbishop Oscar Romero.
Oh.
And he was running for governor, or I guess it was president of El Salvador, mm-hmm. against, and Jesse Helms was supporting him as
course.
President. So, you know, that gives you a sense of how this thing all is tragically linked together.
Yeah. So,
another story that might be interesting is that, and about this same period of time, it was back in the 1980s, 85s, there were three nuns who were arrested by, not caught, I mean, they were caught.
Abducted.
By a Catholic lay, and with a Catholic lay worker, by Salvadorians, again, who were documented to have been trained at the School of the Americas. And these three Marinol sisters, they were Marinols. I forgot what, I can't remember now.
But they were American.
They were ordered in a group of nuns, and they were raped and killed and buried, all four of them, in a location that was finally found in Salvador.
Yeah.
So basically, it's the people from the countries that we were encouraging to dominate their communities. I mean, they were abusing lay workers, union workers,
laborers.
Abusing the people who were trying to support the communities.
Lift up their communities.
Right. That those are the ones that are the targets, because they want to keep their power and they don't want anything to challenge their power. Yes, I was going to ask about the nuns, because that, as a former Catholic, that was a shock that they would. For one thing, it just seemed to me that it was so stupid to get bad publicity for yourself, but they don't care. They got power, and we support them, and they don't give a darn.
And some people have heard about the massacre at El Mozote. I mean, that was a prominent massacre of children, mamas and families and whoever else that were there, and the whole community was virtually wiped out except for one or two women somehow escaped this. So these women frequently come to the SOA demo, which is this.
Where was that at? Was that in Mexico?
No, that's Salvador.
That is El Salvador, because I know there's been attacks like that in Mexico, in Chiapas.
Was also documented, Chiapas.
Yeah.
Los Ovejos, the bees.
Okay.
Right after the Free Trade Treaty in 1994 was approved by the government, U.S. government, Los Ovejos, the bees, protested against this, and they were basically abused and attacked by, again, documented graduates of the School of the Americas. The School of the Americas, interesting enough, when all this pressure started back in the late 90s and the early 2000s, the government decided that they were going to change the name of the base. So it's now called, it's not the School of the Americas, it's the Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation, WINSEC.
WINSEC, because the name had become, thanks to Father Roy Bourgeois and people like you and a lot of people who've been going and informing themselves and protesting, it became a dirty word. So they didn't change their tactics. What they did was change their name and hopes that...
And they insisted, of course, the government insisted that they cleaned up their act.
Yeah, one of the notorious things was one of the teaching manuals was on how to torture. And that was a real telling point for, once it got out in the public, the U.S. Army says, well, we're not using that anymore.
We're not using that manual. And that's why we're saying that they were teaching torture, because somebody got hold of one of the teaching manuals, and that's exactly what it was. And some years ago, we would have said, oh, no, our country wouldn't be doing that. But after Guantanamo, you realize our country is doing that or can be doing that. And, you know, it's further confirmation, but that manual was such a damning piece of evidence. So the Army is saying they're not doing it. I hope it wasn't that they just changed the manual like the name.
I think you can be sure they just changed the manual.
That's what I'm thinking.
Our first trip down there, should we switch to that?
Sure.
Jane and I went down from Richmond with a van load of basically folk who were working with the Catholic Welfare, I mean, the Richmond Peace Education Center, and the Little Flower Catholic Worker House, which is just outside of Richmond. And our first trip down there was in 97. Well, at that time, it was growing. I mean, in the years from the 25th anniversary back there to 97, there were probably 4,000 or 5,000 people down there, and groups of Catholic orders that I had never heard of, nuns and Jesuit schools and Jesuit colleges and all kinds of organizations, all over the country and outside in Canada and otherwise. And at that time, now this was before 9/11, so at that time, people, unless they did something extremely aggressive, were not getting arrested. I mean, I happened to go across with 600 other people, many from here, names that people would know. I mean, Gail Ferris was perhaps the most prominent person that people would know around here. And the Army, we walked on the base and walked maybe a mile down into the base, and the Army arrested us all. And they took about an hour or so to process the 600 of us that went across, and then they fed us a hot meal. I mean, we had soup and chicken and green beans and ice cream and pie.
He still remembers.
I mean, it was amazing. Everything was so unreal. And we were then all of us that went that year were banned and barred for the next 5 years. Mm-hmm. Well, 9/11 came along, and you went over several times. You tell them.
As the crowds grew each year, I didn't go the first year because somebody needed to stay and be able to drive the van and, you know, do other things. I guess it was 2000 when I went across. And if you can picture the base, there's a road going in and a road coming out of this main entrance. And they were wide open. They had personnel, Army personnel around, but you could walk onto the base with no problem. And so there were 3,000 of us who were arrested that day. And the thing that they said...
3,000, wow.
The thing that they said is, if you turn around and go back, you will not be arrested. But if you continue to walk on deeper into the base, you will be arrested. And this loudspeaker kept warning us about that. So we were taken onto the base and processed in big Quonset hut type buildings. And I don't know, it took hours because there were so many of us, but we didn't get any food at all.
It was already starting to tighten up a little. Well, it's one thing, 600. So from when you did in 97 to 2000, it was growing that much,
right,
from 600 to
exactly.
Be arrested to 3,000.
And there were prominent names, I mean, that were down there. I mean, one of the names that Jane and I remember was Martin Sheen, who then was the president of West Wing. And he came there for several years, and each time he announced that he was closing the base as president of the West Wing TV show, but nobody paid any attention to him except those of us that agreed with him, of course.
And I'm letting you know the base is closed.
I mean, there was the process that developed probably about 95, 96 as the crowd started to grow, was that there was a formal activity that occurred at the end of Sunday afternoon, which is a very moving thing.
About it was Sunday morning.
Sunday morning.
This is by the people who are protesting. Okay, you started having like a ritual or a program.
There'd be all kinds of groups down there, of course, with tables of various kinds of offering pins and buttons and T-shirts and various other things. But on Sunday morning, there was a formal process set up where at the platform up ahead, right before you'd go onto the base, there would be two people, one person reading in Spanish and the other person reading in English, and all the crowd would have white wooden crosses or cardboard crosses. Mm-hmm. And they would read the name of somebody who was killed by graduates of the School of the Americas, and they'd say, Jose Maria Abzabal Berrizabal Presente. Mm-hmm. And then people would put their sign up, and that would maybe go on for several hours because the numbers have steadily grown.
So this was very moving. Not just talking about numbers, but reading the names.
Every name that they could document that had been killed, there would be several thousand names that got read.
Yeah,
and
that really starts hitting your heart.
It really does. Often there would be a name 3 months old.
So the
you
age,
know,
I was going to
they often gave the age of the person who was killed, and it just brings tears to your eyes because it's a very emotional thing.
Yeah.
But after 9/11, the gates were closed, mm-hmm. and there was no more free entrance.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to get arrested, if you wanted to make your protest, then you had to climb the fence or go, you know, mm-hmm. figure out some way of getting onto the base.
Mm-hmm.
So that cut the numbers of those being arrested.
Cut it down.
Way down.
And since then, I don't right offhand know a number, but there have been hundreds of people since 9/11 who have gone over the fence.
Mm-hmm.
Jane and I have not. But these folk can expect to have 6 months in a federal prison. And it's very unlikely that somebody won't get 6 months in a federal prison. And
even if it's a first offense?
Even at that, since 9/11, the mood has changed.
Yeah.
And what's happened is that these folk are put in a local jail in Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them are then sent to Alderson prison, which is a federal prison in West Virginia.
Mm-hmm.
But some of them go different places.
Mm-hmm.
But that's basically the format.
So the risk has increased.
Definitely.
Yeah.
And the numbers have increased. But about 5 years ago, I'm going to say, maybe four, the numbers of people that were coming down there was in the 20,000s. I mean, it grew significantly.
So the numbers
have decreased.
I'm talking about the numbers of people who came to the School of the Americas protest.
Oh, yeah. That has increased each year.
It has until about 4 years ago, say.
Mm-hmm.
Father Roy was involved in the ordination of a woman Catholic priest.
Mm-hmm.
And a year or two later, that word got to the Pope. Now, this is not the current Pope.
It was Pope Benedict.
It was Pope Benedict, whose earlier name was Cardinal Ratzinger.
Yes, little.
And he was the hammer guy in the Catholic hierarchy,
mm-hmm.
at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And then he became Benedict.
He had been, I forget the office is called, but it's what was the former office of the Inquisition. But
something like that.
Defender of the Faith, I think.
That sounds right. That sounds right.
Yeah, so he what did he defrock him or no?
Yeah, they defrocked him. And that really scared off the Jesuits. So the numbers started falling because the Jesuit high schools from California or wherever they might be,
mm-hmm.
weren't coming.
Well, they no longer had funding.
They didn't have the support yet.
Funding was cut off.
Mm-hmm.
So the numbers in the last couple of years have been probably down at maybe 7,000, mm-hmm. 6,000.
Oh, and, really?
And it's hard to know how many will go this year.
So a lot of Catholics then stopped going because of Father Roy?
And the organizations that supported them. I mean, part of the reality of this is that usually people don't go down by themselves.
Yeah.
I mean, they go down in a group. Like,
yeah.
From our standpoint, since 99, we've been going down with a group of folk that start off with the Church of Reconciliation here in Chapel Hill.
Yeah, which is not a Catholic church.
No, it's a Presbyterian church.
Mm-hmm.
And people come from different places. But
there's been a lot of Catholic support, and for a lot of Catholics, they couldn't give institutional support since Father Roy had been Is that the word that's used? A defrocked, I guess, or...
Well, I don't know.
I don't know. His credentials were removed.
I always say defrocked because that's the sense of it.
Yeah, well, because you're a priest forever, according to the order of Melchizedek. You can't take, like, being a priest, but I guess you're not a priest in good standing. You maybe can't do the sacraments. Mm-hmm. As a former Catholic, I should know this better. But essentially, he's still a priest, but he's not
And the Marinoles, for several years, tried to figure out what to do, because Father Roy was a recognized significant person, priest,
and he was in the
Marinole order.
And I think they wanted to support him, but they got too much pressure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know exactly what his position is right now.
Because mm-hmm. the Marinoles are pretty cool, because they do a lot of...
Yes.
They're pretty internationally minded, because they have missions all over. And I think I remember that they were trying to support him, but I think that they got a lot of institutional pressure on them, so I don't know where that's at now either. But the point is that it has reduced some of the institutional Catholic support, and it's reduced the numbers, but it's you can't sneeze at 6,000 or 7,000 people.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still really...
Yeah, and of course the army down there is very aggressive, and Columbus, Georgia is ambivalent about what to do, because this weekend, when it was in the 20,000, particularly...
They had a lot of good business.
Filled up all the rooms in the hotels around and so on.
If you wanted a motel room, I think I was told you had to go 30, 40 miles away or something.
If you didn't arrange ahead of time.
If you didn't arrange ahead of time. So I'm sure that it was popular with the business... small businesses in town. Dick, do we need to take a station
break?
Yes,
it's station break time. This is the Wilf Show, the wake-up call. I'm Dick Paddock, the co-host with Lori Hoyt. And our guests today are Wes and Jane Hare, or Jane and Wes Hare, depending.
Either will do.
Right. And we are brought to you on the facilities of WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, which you can find on your radio dial at 103.5 FM, or you can stream it from the website of WCOM, which is wcomfm.org. We are the Triangle branch of the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, we have a website also, which is triangle wilpf.org. That's triangle wilpf.org. And we are underwritten by our only underwriter since we've been on the air, and that is Internationalist Bookstore at 1007 Lloyd Street in Carrboro. Just recently moved and have a really nice setup now. No mold and no difficulties. A really good setup.
And parking, that's a biggie.
Yes.
Because the parking was really difficult where they were before. And now it's free parking. It's in Carrboro. Carrboro's got a lot of parking. And not like Chapel Hill. Let's put in a plug in for Carver while we're at it, where our radio station is and where Internationalist Books are. And some of the parking, I think, is behind the building, but it's right as you turn in from Main Street. It's right there, one building down on the left. So it's real easy to walk to from Weaver Street, bike to.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's real easy. Okay, let's get back to the show.
So we
continue our discussion of the SOA and.
And the SOA Watch.
Tell us when the dates are and all that kind of information.
So it's coming up. It's coming up.
Oh, this, you're talking about this. Yeah.
Yes.
Not today, but next Friday, the 21st.
The 21st.
If people are immediately interested in going or want to find out about this, we'd need to hear very soon, because we have 8 rooms reserved at the Econo Lodge on Veterans Parkway in Columbus, Georgia. And we have 1 van that from this community is going down on Friday morning at 9 o'clock. And if somebody wanted to really call me right away on Wednesday or very early on Thursday, then we could talk about that. And my phone number, our phone number, is 919-929-3316. My email, it happens that I'm going this year particularly, so my email is Wabbit, W-A-B-B-I-T, Wabbit for hair. So it's Wabbit, W-A-B-B-I-T, the number 4, and then P as in Paul, Z as in zebra, so it's Wabbit for PZ at nc.rr.com, and my last name is Hair, which will help you remember the rabbit. It's not the letter four, it's the number four, Wabbit for Peace.
So. Yeah, that is so clever. And that's why I laughed. It's really cute, really cute.
Now, it's one other thing that's kind of interesting about this, if you're ready for me to talk a little
bit. Yes, we are.
The U.S., the SOA Watch, which is, it can be reached, just go on the website, the SOA Watch. And it'll pop up. You'll find it.
And that will tell you.
They're based in Washington, D.C.
And they have a lot more about it.
And some of them are down in Georgia already, of course, getting ready, because there's a variety of different activities and workshops in addition to what's going to happen on Saturday morning, afternoon, and then on Sunday morning at the street that goes up to the base. Witness for Peace has workshops down there. I wouldn't be surprised if Wilf doesn't have a workshop down there of some sort. The Presbyterians have workshops. Presbyterian Peace Fellowship has workshops. There's a variety of Catholic groups that are down there. There are singers that many of you would have known. Talk about one of our favorite singer that was down there.
Ooh, our favorite singer. Let's see.
Have you been to Jail for Justice? Then you're a friend of mine.
Holly Near.
Ann Feeney.
Holly Near has been there.
Holly Near has been there. Emma's Revolution has been there. They're just amazing musical talent there that goes on all weekend from the center stage that's set up right in the middle of the street.
And at the convention center.
At the convention center. But some of the workshops are really very good, and there are films that go on from morning at late into late at night that, you know, just good information on Central America and a lot of peace activities.
Even though it's a very serious, very, very serious protest, like all the protests, there's also a feeling of joy being together, standing firm against injustice and oppression. There is that sense of festivity for part of it, you know, with music and keeping one's spirits up, because standing around for long hours, you know, you need your spirits kept up. And
there are puppetistas that do street theater, so there's always big productions that everybody is invited to join in.
Yeah.
And drumming and rhythm and all, and of course a chance to meet folk that very likely you've encountered years ago in some different environment or somewhere different, and all ages.
Yeah.
Old folks like us, and then high school kids. And, and families. It's a remarkable thing.
Which is always wonderful, because there's so much going on in the world that can lead one to be discouraged and depressed, and it's so important to be together in community with, in solidarity with other people, to know that you're not alone, that there are people out there that care like you do, and you know, and keeping your spirits up so you keep on with the struggle for justice.
There's one more thing that goes on that I'd like to point out, and that is one of the largest immigrant detention camps is in a town that's about 30 miles away from Columbus. And every year there's a rally in the town, and then a march from there to the camp. And additional speeches and inspiration and well-wishing for the inmates there.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I wanted you to, if you can remember what town it is. It starts
is
with
it L. Lumpkin?
Is that, yeah, you're talking Lumpkin. About Lumpkin Prison
yeah.
Center.
Yes.
It's going to be different this year for the first time. SOA is deliberate. It used to be that different groups over the years would go down there first. Mm-hmm. And what SOA is doing this year is moving things back on Saturday morning so that there's deliberate buses that are going to be hired to make it possible for folk who come down there Friday evening or even Thursday. There's things going on way back on Thursday and Friday. But then they can get on these buses and go to Lumpkin and have a gathering and
Saturday
a rally.
Saturday morning so that they'll have a much larger group to
go to Lumpkin. Yeah. That's great. So they're sort of working together instead of it being two separate things.
Yeah, in a way, that was a frustration for many folks because they wanted to do both, and it was harder to do both.
Yeah.
But SOA Watch has figured out how to integrate this into the weekend.
Yeah. And most people can't come on Wednesday and Thursday, it's a weekend thing. So by putting this on Saturday morning, it allows a lot more of the group to go.
Yeah, you all are leaving Friday morning. Some people go after work on Friday and drive through the night to get there.
UNC used to have a bus that would leave.
Way back when Joe Straley, some of you are your listeners are here. Remember Joe Straley and his group of folks.
Staunch Wilk person, Joe and Lucy Straley.
But they had the capacity to hustle up a regular bus that would leave on Friday evening, drive all night. They leave on Saturday night, drive all night. The kids or students or whoever was on that bus would then sleep on the bus, and they'd be there all day Sunday and then come back and sleep all night on the way back so they could go to class or whatever they were doing on Monday morning.
On Monday. Only the young could do that.
And Joe Straley,
Okay. And you mentioned Gail Ferris earlier. Maybe just a few brief words. Gail Ferris is one of the founders of Witness for Peace, and she got arrested and did go to prison.
Yes.
To federal prison. That was just 3 or 4 years ago.
Yes. In fact, she was probably arrested earlier when they weren't prosecuting.
She was part of it. In fact, she ate this supper with me down at Fort Benning. She was with me in 97, that same time.
Because of those nuns that were murdered by people who were trained by the SOA were close friends of hers, and that is what led her to change her life and dedicate herself to founding Witness for Peace and bringing delegations of people to these countries and finding out what's going on, being a witness and coming back and letting your home communities, you're trying to spread the word, because Americans are so bereft of getting real news. You know, I used to feel so sorry for Russian people many, many, many years ago when the Cold War and how terrible it must be to live in Russia and not get any news, just have Izvestia, the government newspaper. And then in recent years you find out that even though we talk about freedom of the press, a lot of it is heavily influenced by corporations.
Right.
So,
I want to run over a little bit if you have time. I don't know how much time you would take.
How much time do we have?
Oh, we've got lots of time.
Okay.
I've got another 15 minutes anyway.
Okay. I mean, this morning I talked to a woman named Maria Luisa Rosal, who's now based in Columbus, Georgia. And she sent me the names of the countries that have. The SOA Watch has had leadership. Father Roy and a woman named Lisa Sullivan and other very capable and energetic and active folk who have gone around to different political leaders in countries south of the Rio Grande. Remember, it's important to know that Cuba was never welcome at the School of the Americas. This was only for countries who were allegedly on our side.
Yes, okay.
Okay, but Lisa sent me this email this morning. I asked her to do it. Countries that have been pulled out of the SOA WINSAC. Mm-hmm.
By their leaders.
By their leaders.
Okay, their leaders finding out what was really going on.
They would have these meetings with the SOA Watch leadership and make the decision. Venezuela, 2004.
Pulled out of...
Yeah, this was about the time that who I call Shrub, W. Bush, started Venezuela being on the axis of evil or whatever it was.
Yes.
So they pulled out. Argentina, 2006. Bolivia, 2007. Ecuador, 2012. And Nicaragua, 2012.
Wow.
So these are countries that have pulled out. There are other countries that are sending various, these are not necessarily all just soldiers. These are various political leaders and folk who are on the side of the right-wing politicians and
government in the country. So yeah. Who are some of the countries that still send people?
The largest country, which I probably won't surprise you, is Colombia. Mm. Colombia in 2013 had 705 people that were trained at WINSEC.
Colombia as murders more labor leaders than any other country. Their murdering of labor leaders is a scandal.
And, you know, others are kind of surprising too. I mean, Honduras, which is well known for having a president now who overthrew another president,
yes,
had a president who was trained at the School of the Americas. They have 113. And... of course, the USA happens to have 146 people trained down there.
Trained down there.
Probably people from, I'm going to guess, but people from not necessarily traditional U.S. military, but from some minority groups, and I don't know this, I'm guessing, that are going down there so they can kind of, what I'm going to call, infiltrate into the other governments.
What about Mexico? Does Mexico...
You know, Mexico surprised me. I thought they had more. I've always heard they have, but they only have 20.
At least that's now.
Right now.
More in
2013.
Yeah.
But, of course, we all have heard about the various atrocities that are going on in Mexico with the drug lords and all.
Yeah. What about Guatemala? Are they on there?
Guatemala had 20... There's another kind of segment here. Guatemala has... mobile training units that get trained at the school, at WINSEC. I'm going to say WINSEC, so you, Western Hemisphere Institute for Security Cooperation.
That's their new name.
But Paraguay has 71.
Ooh.
Colombia has 93 more of these mobile training units.
In addition to the other individuals.
Dominican Republic has 80 trainees there.
How about Haiti? Does Haiti have any? I hope not.
No, I don't see Haiti in here.
Good.
I don't.
Yeah.
Now there is a booklet that they prepare what they call the Presente booklet.
Uh huh.
There is an article about Haiti.
So.
Well.
Yeah. We'll save that for another. Show that we could do a couple of shows on Haiti, that's for sure.
Yeah.
So you two are going, and you still have room if some people...
We have room if I hear right away.
Right away, because we're taping it a little early, but this is going to be on next Wednesday the 19th, and so if they call you by Thursday morning, Wednesday night or Thursday morning, there's still a chance of
get our phone number or
let's do the phone number again.
919-929-3316 or wabbit4p@nc.rr.com.
Okay.
WABBIT.
Okay.
The number 4. P as in Paul, Z as in zebra. So it's wabbit4p.
Okay, and that's a nice way to, rather than going on a bus, it's, I'm sure, a lot more comfortable in a van. How many hours does the trip take?
Well, we usually leave pretty close to 9 o'clock on Friday morning,
mm-hmm.
and we stop somewhere either in very close to South Carolina or in South Carolina we might take a potty stop in there, but then mm-hmm. we stop and have lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And we almost always get down there right about supper time.
Oh, that's not too bad.
Columbus is right on the edge of the Eastern time zone, And the Chattahoochee River separates Columbus from Alabama, Phoenix City. So we have, it stays up later, like right now it's going to be dark here about 5:30. Mm-hmm. Well, down there it won't be dark 6:30 or so. And we're usually there about then and have a supper.
Oh, that works out nice.
Get settled into our rooms.
Yeah, that works out nicely.
And there are programs, there's a lot of programs that we haven't mentioned. There's a lot of programs that go on at a convention center, mm-hmm. which is right along the Chattahoochee River in downtown Columbus.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's something for just about everybody. I mean, as an older geezer, I don't tend to want to go to a particularly late after 8:30 or 9 o'clock at night. I'm ready to go to bed.
Me too.
I might want to have a drink of wine and then go to bed. But still, but for a lot of other people, this convention center has a lot of stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
Workshops, singing, dancing.
There's concerts. Go from 9 to midnight or something like that.
And they generally have people building puppets for their bread and puppet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, these puppetista things are very exciting. They dress up in big caricatures of these dictators who were trained at the School of the Americas, and then they have drummers and they have people on puppets and they at a certain time on Saturday and then on Sunday they go charging down the street with drums banging and
and
that kind of balances out the somber event of the presente. Experience.
Yeah. So the convention center, that's a nice reminder that there's a lot of young people going. There's stuff for young people. So older folks like to be in bed and quiet down around 8, 9, 10 o'clock. But so for young people who might be listening, it'll be a lot going on late and a lot of music, a lot of fun things and enjoyable things. And I guess making signs, getting the puppets mm-hmm, built and everything. So, what do we...
There are also people down there who live there year-round. I mean, there are people who are so wrapped up in what this experience is and the various arms that go out from this experience mm-hmm. or come into this experience.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Teresa Alamine, who's been in Durham and Chapel Hill for years... she's been down there 4 years now?
Yes.
And Dick is going down, you're going
to... Yeah, I'm leaving on Wednesday, actually, flying mm-hmm. down there, and we're going to have a pre-Thanksgiving on Thursday before,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll be doing the activities like going to Lumpkin in being involved in what happens presente, of course, being the peak.
Mm-hmm.
And so, so I'm going to be down there for sure.
Okay. Just going down there early. And Therese and Dick, we might as well give a plug for Wilf and for Soren.
Right. Wilf, of course, is the organization that all of us here at the table belong to. But...
The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom.
Right. And that would be triangle.wilpf.org. And then I'm also with a group called Project SARN, the Southern Anti-Racism Network. And you can find its website at projectsarn.org. And... we should have something up about our participation in the SOA this year, the SOA watch activities, very shortly thereafter. And of course, we have stuff up there already about previous activities that we've had here and in Columbus.
So,
I mean, the thing that it keeps me going for these 17 years. Is that I've been in a variety of activist things and rallies in D.C. and other places and protests and so on, but there's nothing in my experience that even comes close to comparing to what this does in terms of being, it's much more than a protest, it's more a commemoration and a remembrance mm-hmm. and a mourning, but a joyful experience at the same time because you've... Congress has come close to voting in the House against this. The Senate has never
against
shutting down, defunding the school. But it's kind of been a joke. I mean, we get close, but then, I mean, our local congressman, David Price, has voted against it consistently, has voted in favor of defunding the School of the American.
Well, that's great to know. And so it comes close, but do you think it's getting closer, or do you think that
9/11 has changed? 9/11 has changed the whole atmosphere.
Yeah.
It's time we stop being afraid.
Yeah.
You're right. Well, another thing that folks might be interested in is that the SOA Watch has a whole platoon of attorneys who volunteer their time to help folks who decide to be arrested or who may get accosted by the police. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of security around where the protest area is. Mm-hmm. And so they provide that for people who need some kind of legal service. And that's always a part of every vigil.
Yeah, it's sort of like the Moral Mondays, you know. Uh-huh. There's always these wonderful attorneys who care about justice, and not just about paychecks and big careers. And that's just always heartening, since lawyers have not a much better reputation than the politicians.
Right.
So they kind of keep some integrity with the profession.
Yeah, generally, the atmosphere by the police has been positive. I mean, restrained positive, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple of years ago, there was some kind of... A lot of people were getting arrested who did nothing, basically. I mean, one of the notorious stories is after the event was over, some guy was getting his hair cut in a barbershop that was right at the going out of the SOA protest area. And he came out to see what was going on, and he got arrested. I mean, so most of the time, though, it's been, other than the political pressure that the Army can put on.
Put on the local.
Generally speaking, it's been restrained, but not what I'm going to call nasty.
Mm-hmm.
But a couple of years ago, something happened that it got bad. But 9/11 throws dirt in the game, I mean, in that sense.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's thrown a lot of dirt in the game in many ways. I mean, this whole security apparatus, the whole security state. I mean, all the talk we've been having lately about the militarization of the police. And first you're just hearing it was excess equipment from the Defense Department, and then now it's come out that's only 10% of it, that most of it's from Homeland Security, you know. So there's a whole lot that's kind of creepy and kind of scary. I had a daughter over today, and she's been saying for a long time, you know, oh, they're going to put us in these they've built these concentration camps. And they said, yeah, that's why we all got to stick together, honey, you know, and not let them scare us. We, you know, in unity there is strength.
Now, speaking of Ferguson, we are having our weekly vigil at Elliott and Franklin today, Wednesday, and we're going to be
building... No, Friday.
Okay, right, Friday.
Today's Friday.
Yeah, I'm thinking Wednesday next week already. And we're going to be making posters and placards and whatever for our action to support whatever goes right or goes wrong in Ferguson.
We anticipate it,
and the basic schedule is whatever day
the verdict
or decision comes down, then the next day, either in the evening or in the afternoon, there will be an action at Elliott and Franklin. At this point, that's the decision, and so we want to have lots of people come out there, and we'll be making signs this afternoon, being the Friday before the trip to the SOA. So,
because every Friday, I guess a lot of people know that every Friday there's been a vigil since the beginning of the Iraq War at Elliott and Franklin from, depending on the time of year, 5 to 6 or 4:30 to 5:30. Is it 4:30 now?
Is it 4:30?
4:30, because it's getting darker earlier. Yeah. So 4:30 to 5:30. So that's why if there's going to be a protest regarding the verdict.
Right.
So it could be either a protest or a celebration, depending how the verdict goes, but they're kind of pessimistic that it may not go well.
Well, we need to sign off. We've kind of run out of time. We want to thank Wes and Jane Hare for the use of their kitchen, as well as being on the show.
And for their 17 years of faithful support
activity.
Of the SOA Watch. It's
watching the SOA.
Being a witness to what's going on.
Do we know who will be on next week?
I can't remember.
Okay. I can't either if I knew.
I can't remember on first base, or is that the case?
It's on my calendar.
Abbott and Costello can't remember it.
Yeah. So, but anyway, this will be on the Wednesday, November 19th, and then on the 26th, we will have somebody else. I don't know who yet.
Yes, it's right before Thanksgiving. I think it's open-ended trying to, I think I wanted to try to get two people who we thought we were going to have on, and left it kind of open-ended to see if we could fit them in. So that's why I can't remember.
Right. Okay.
Yeah. So,
See you this coming Wednesday and all the Wednesdays thereafter, 5 o'clock, Women's International League for Peace and Freedom wake-up call on WCOM LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro, 103.5 on your FM dial.